Hi, and welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast, where we talk about all things flute live here on Patreon. What is Patreon? Patreon is a place for fans like you to come and support creators like us. So why not join us over on Patreon and help us continue to make great content? The Flute Talk Podcast is also brought to you by the Flute Center of New York. The Flute Center of New York has the world's largest selection of flutes. If you need to buy a flute or piccolo, the Flute Center of New York has you covered. With our code TFC at checkout, you can try up to 3 to 4 flutes for up to 10 days, have an extended 18-month warranty, and free shipping worldwide. So be sure to go to the website flutes4sale.com. So that's flutes4sale.com, flutesforsale.com. Just be sure to use that code TFC for all those perks, and a little bit of that does go our way. Another sponsor is, well, ourselves. We have a store. If you haven't noticed yet, we have a store over at store.thefluechannel.com. We have some shirts and posters and things like that over at Teespring. So you can definitely go there and get some merch, posters, whatever you'd like that we have. It will be there. You'll probably notice it under our videos. If you're interested, be sure to go to store.thefluechannel.com. That helps us out immensely. So yeah, on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast. I'm Nick.
And I'm Emily.
How's it going, Emily?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. So this is the show that we do at the last Sunday of every month, where we answer your questions live on YouTube. So if you're listening to this podcast live, be sure to join us then on the last Sunday of every month. And leave your questions down below. Also, if you have a question, and if you're listening or if you're watching this again later, be sure to leave a question down in the comments, and also go leave a review over at Apple Podcasts if you use Apple Podcasts or wherever you find podcasts and can leave reviews. That's always very helpful as well. So yeah, this month we're going to be talking about summer practice and stuff like that. So like, what were your summer routines, or what did you do during the summer musically wise that kind of engaged you more after school, because you went to school for music and all that stuff too, so you had those gaps.
Well, like, you mean when I was a student?
Yeah,
when I was a student, it was kind of half and half. Like, I would probably do a festival, like a music camp or something like that. That was pretty intense. But I would also have, like, maybe at least 2 weeks where I was just on vacation and didn't really practice. And then I had other time where I would just practice at home and try to go through what I learned during those festivals, because those are pretty packed with information.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And like reinvest that in my practice and try to remember. I would take notes and retranscribe them on little, I still have them, like little index cards. Mm-hmm. And like I have the name of the person who was giving the masterclass, and like, yeah. So I would go through those things, mm-hmm, and try to remember and practice those.
Were some of your summer goals like the same as like your regular goals during the year, or did that change a little bit, or were you more hyper-focused in the summer on specific elements? Did you do something a little bit different than you would usually do during the school year?
I don't know. I think I was trying to work on my fundamentals a little bit more maybe in the summer. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to prepare for a concert or competition, you know. Sometimes I would start my pieces. If my teacher and I had chosen pieces for the next year, I would start them right away. But also, it's important to have some time off, you know. Mm-hmm. It's cool. It's cool if you can use some of your summer to do some intensive program. That's very cool. But also, like, balance it out, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when we're not doing something, we can, you know.
Any advice for, like, people who also, like, kind of take a break during the summer a little bit and then coming back? I know somebody said in the comments, what do you do when you have to relearn stuff during long breaks? Like, say...
After long breaks?
Yeah, like, say, especially even in summer, like, I know a lot of people, they take, like, a month off and then they try to go back and get in the swing of things. What's your tips about that to kind of get back to where they were?
Well, don't stress too much about it. Because, mm-hmm, like, sometimes you have... Like, if the sound is more difficult, you're right. Like, oh, I lost my sound. No, it's just little muscles that need to get awakened, mm-hmm, again, mm-hmm, and then you'll be fine. Like, even sometimes you can lose some bad habits when you take a break. So, yeah, when you take your flute again, like, play what you feel like playing. Maybe do a little bit of sound exercises, right, to put things back, some harmonics, some, mm-hmm, long tones, and then But you don't have to do that all the time. You can also sometimes just take your flute and play. It's also okay. You know, like learn studies, those types of things.
Okay. That's cool. Hopefully
but now that I'm not a student anymore, summers are more like a time to do some specific projects that maybe during the school year, they're a bit more difficult to get done because I have more students, like, more teaching, all that stuff.
Like preparing for a concert, for like a repertoire for a Christmas concert or something. You practice that stuff during the summer, so you have ample time to do rehearsals, for instance.
Yeah, because like this summer, I'd like to make an album. I'd like to finish a second book. I'd like to, you know, do a couple of things like that. Maybe make a couple of videos. Even make a little bank.
Exactly.
Now it's a bit different than when I was a student.
Thanks, Kent, so much. If you're listening to this live, we got Kent supporting us through the super chat. Always amazing. I think you're going to have a lesson soon, which is really cool as well. So thanks so much for that.
Thank
That's really
you.
Amazing. I want to jump a little bit into another question. Samantha, she was going along the same lines as practicing, but efficient practicing. She feels that when she goes through all of her tone, warm-ups, and technique work, that she doesn't have enough time to go through repertoire. Like, how would you make practice more efficient so that they can go through everything?
Well, maybe just check how long do you think you have, and then segment it.
Yeah.
And then put an alarm.
Right. So wherever you stop, say the alarm goes off, say you're halfway through an etude, you just stop and then go to the next thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I used to have a little practice book and I would write what I did. And then I had like a system, like sound, what I did. And then in parentheses, what I would do the next day.
Okay.
Then I would have technique.
That's a cool system.
And do that. And then etude. Let's say I worked on the three first lines. Next time I want to learn the three next ones, you know, and I would go like that. So next time I would take my flute, I didn't have to, where was I? Like I was saving a lot of time. And if you say it's 5 minutes of sound exercises, but it's 5 minutes, you know. But also sometimes what I do with students, I tend to do my lessons like that, like sound, technique, etudes. Sometimes I feel we didn't do enough repertoire, so sometimes we start with the repertoire and we go back up, you know, and we just do a very quick warm up for the sound. And then we go directly to, you can also do that sometimes. Just do a little minute warm up and then go directly in your piece. And don't always start with the beginning of your repertoire, like first page, because like you're more rested. So you will learn the beginning very well and then the rest might not be as solid, so don't always start from the beginning.
Right.
It's okay. Like, if you practice every day, you didn't forget how to play during the night, so you can still take your flute and play.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you have to learn a piece, well, put time in there, and then you can make two more scales after the concert or after, like, if there's something that you need to learn.
Yeah. Or if you feel confident in something, you know, maybe just work on the tough parts that you always found in the piece so that you don't have to go through the whole entire sonata or the whole entire movement. You can just play 45 seconds a couple times and then you're done. If you're confident, you know, I used to make markings like, oh, I'm confident in this. I don't need to work on that right now. I'm going to work on the other things, give it a little bit more time so I can work more on that. Yeah.
Because like you could say, let's say you practice an hour. You could be like, I do 20 minutes of sound and technique, like scales and sounds. So 20 minutes in total, maybe 5 to 10 minutes of sound and the rest on technique and then a little 10, 15 minutes on your study.
Right.
And then the rest on repertoire. Then you have time. It's just maybe you do too many technical exercises. Maybe you need to do a little bit less.
Exactly.
And it's better to do less, but to do it more.
Sure.
To do it more times, you know, more repetitions. So that's how you're going to create some speed and some if you always
fluidity,
do it if every week you always change your exercise and you don't go back to them,
sure,
that might be good for your sight reading or something, but like for really building technique, I'm not sure it's going to be as efficient.
There you go. Also, Pauline wants to know any advice on autonomous practice, I guess practice without a teacher. They're getting ready for a very important audition in September. What would you be your recommendations? Auditions, that's
pretty
always
much what I just said.
Yeah. I would also encourage recording because, like, if you're going to do an audition, maybe simulate yourself doing an audition, like walk into the frame, record yourself, try to do it all at once if possible. If not, don't worry about it. Just keep going through. That way you know what parts are causing something to go wrong. And plus you have a visual record of it. So don't think about it right at the moment. When you review it, write those little sections so that you can give yourself plenty of time to work on that stuff, because that's one thing about summer is that the next thing is auditions, obviously, for people who are in schools and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And like, start doing those mock auditions early in the process, and then listen to the result of your mock audition, and try to see what's good and what needs more time. So this way you can organize your practice. Let's say you realize that your scales are a bit, you know your repertoire very well, but your scales, not so much. Then maybe you'll put more time on that, or that under pressure.
Yeah.
You were playing your piece very well, but when you're a bit stressed, breathing is more difficult. Then you'll figure out where to breathe. Maybe you breathe, like how to breathe a bit better. That can be a good, and like, I would say learning your stuff so that it's known pretty much like 3 weeks to a month before the audition.
Yeah.
And then after that, you just work on keeping it
nice and tight, for sure.
Yeah, and also working on mock auditions.
Mock auditions help, and like, even have a recorder, like a video recorder, but also have somebody there as well listening to you, and they can be like, okay, play this excerpt. It could be anybody, you're one of your family members, whatever. They'll probably get to know that piece very intimately if you're practicing it at home a lot. So bring some papers to them. Have them imitate to be a adjudicator.
Sometimes I had my parents sit in the living room, and I was like, I'm going to play my concert exam repertoire.
Exactly.
Just the fact that they're sitting there, and I told myself I have to go, even if I make a mistake, it's as if it was a concert. It's a very good practice.
Yeah, and also expose yourself to that music. Say it's an orchestra excerpt or something. Listen to the pieces, how it's applied in music, how it's applied in real life, in recordings and in videos. Like, we kind of tend to, you know, when you're actually sitting in that seat in the first flute or whatever, or second flute or whatever, you tend to think, oh, I'm actually an ensemble, so I shouldn't just blare out all the time. Even if it's a solo, like, you're in orchestration, it's really color that is coming out of those instruments is what the composer is intending, not just blatant. I know a lot of people play excerpts super loud and super, like...
Yeah, but, like, the flute in the orchestra is not the loudest instrument. No, so if you have a solo, usually you should play it out.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Anyways, but yeah, so hopefully those things help. She's writing notes about it right now. She's saying in the chat, which is really cool.
And like I said before, like, if you, like, segment your practice, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So that all those things can be ready on time.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and you didn't say what you thought about the summer thing, though.
Which one, summer things? What do you mean?
Like a summer practice.
What's summer practice. So, you know, just it's a project type of time for most people. So you're kind of by yourself and getting to really kind of use those creative juices that you get, so you can make a program or record and make a little mini album for your family or for the world or whatever, or other projects, you know, working with an ensemble, you know, you can make a little practice ensemble of a quintet or something. Think of ideas. I think it's always a good time in the summer to think of ideas and put things together, and then, you know, practice the core.
That's a very good idea, an ensemble. And I remember I used to play a lot in weddings and stuff like that.
Yep, that's a good time too.
And that can be a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. So, yeah, there's a lot of things like that. And just, you know, I would always do like a checkup of like, and record myself every week on different elements and just to hear myself, because you can kind of get in your own flute head. Sorry, you know, like a flute head, like you're really in a bubble of yourself. So you kind of don't get to hear other people for a while if you're not playing with other people. So the next best thing is, you know, either playing with recordings or hearing yourself by recording and seeing what elements need to be worked on or what can you do better or what is good as well too. And so that you can reinforce that. So those, a recorder is always a super helpful device for progressing faster, because then you develop that second line, that second strand in your brain of putting things together, like your fingers with the flute mechanism is one, but then hearing it and seeing it is another mechanism in your brain, causing more connections and making things easier for you to recall, because it's all about recall and trying to, and it helps out. That's my advice for that. So yeah, I wanted to jump to a couple other questions about other things, because that's what the chat is talking about. But we also did a poll. I made a little mini poll here that will end very soon. But I said, does your practice routine changes by the seasons? And 30% said, yes, I summer I practice more. No, I practice same all year, 43%, which is pretty good. And then some seasons I practice different, 26%, you know. But it's true, like, people have different types of schedules and stuff like that, so it really can be, you know.
Yeah, and some various. People like practicing, preparing their next lesson, and they don't take lessons in the summer, so it's more difficult to
exactly
motivate yourself. But it all depends. Like, adults and teenagers don't have the same right. approach either. Yeah. Like, it's all different.
Yeah, exactly. I had a question here. Lena wanted to know, aren't you bored of the flute repertoire? I mean, we usually play the same things over and over again, and now I'm bored. That keeps me away from practicing sometimes. How do you cope with this?
There's a lot of flute repertoire, and also there's transcriptions.
Yeah, we can also make our own transcriptions from other stuff as well.
Yeah.
I know if you're in school and if you have a teacher, you kind of do tend to fall into little, like I said, little circles of stuff, and it's kind of hard to search out there. But yeah, you know, like, there's sonatas, like Bach sonatas, there's Handel sonatas, there's Telemann sonatas.
There's pop
so
music.
Many.
There's even
pop music.
You can buy arrangement if you don't... Yeah. You can either just learn it by ear, mm-hmm, or you can mm-hmm. buy the music
right.
of pop music if you like that. Like, exactly. There's transcriptions, like even on flutetunes.com.
Yeah, flutetunes.
There's a lot of stuff, you know, mm-hmm. and there's duos and there's solos and there's like a lot of classics, you know, that are not necessarily written for the flute originally. If you go in most popular, you have like Furilis and Pachelbel Belcanin and those types of things. So
how does that...
I'm not saying that's better or... like. But I think there's quite a bit of repertoire in the flute still.
Yeah. Have you ever found yourself like that, like how she is? Like, she's kind of just like stuck and demotivated to practice new stuff because she just simply can't find it, I guess. But we gave the options, but I mean...
You know. I think when I was a student, like, we wouldn't play those types of pieces that are outside of the flute repertoire because that's not what you're evaluated on and all that stuff. You don't go to a competition playing Furilis, you know, on the flute. But, like, no, but sometimes I felt that we would learn a very limited amount of pieces during the year. Like, I would do a study every week, but maybe only four pieces during the whole year, or sometimes even less. So sometimes if you over practice a piece, you can kind of get tired of playing it.
Especially if you're in school. If you're not in school, you have more time. So you're allowed to learn more stuff because you don't have courses and stuff like that. So when you hear those things, I think a lot of people also get a little intimidated, be like, I can only practice four pieces in the year. No, if you're by yourself and you're having private studio, you're doing things by yourself and you have a lot more free time, of course you can learn more stuff so that you can feel less bored, you know?
And like, the summer is a good time for your own project, so if you're tired of that type of repertoire. But I feel maybe sometimes, like, there's a certain level where it's a bit more difficult to find repertoire. Like, not everyone can play Sancan, Dutilleux, all those pieces, so like, or Prokofiev, or there's some very nice pieces that are not...
test pieces and stuff like
that. That are very advanced.
Yeah.
So I feel like some beginner, intermediate repertoire, sometimes I have to admit it's a bit smaller. Mm-hmm. So then you can go for transcriptions, you know, violin pieces and all that.
And there's a lot of modern composers now that write really pop-like, and which is really good. Like, there's Ian Clark, there's the recent
Herman Beefnik.
Herbert Beeftank, also Gary Shocker as well. Like, all those, and Robert Dick, and Robert Aiken.
They write beautifully for the flute. Yeah. Some sound more pop, like Beeftank.
Yeah,
it sounds a bit pop. I had a student who played something for me the other day. It was a piece, I think it's video game music that was arranged for flute, like, super beautiful.
That's cool.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, like you said.
Yeah, and that's for your own personal enjoyment and also for others, too.
Yeah, if you like video game music or movie music, you can find.
Oh, there's so much now. You can go on MuseScore, or you can go on. A lot of arrangers arrange them, and they sell them for very cheap, so you can have that under your fingers and learn those things. Why not? It's music of our time, so why wait to 200 years to play it, you know? So hopefully that answers your question a little bit. Like, I know it can be very overwhelming, and you sort of have like a repertoire vision, your own repertoire tunnel vision, and you don't see anything outside that tunnel vision, so you want to get tips like those are great tips. Flute tunes and IMSLP is really good too. The flute girl, she wants to know, how can I be more confident when I play? I get so nervous, especially when I mess up. I haven't gotten to play in a concert yet, but I'm afraid that I'll be so nervous that I can't play. And actually, I think she's going to be one of your new students coming up this week.
Oh, yeah.
Catherine, I think you're going to be contacting her about that. But yeah, that's a great question.
Cool. Yeah, the nerves, it's something. I would say some people say that it helps them to visualize themselves. Like, you see yourself in your house, in your city, in your province or state or whatever, and then your country, and then you do that all the way to the universe, you know, just so that you feel, not that you feel less important or that what you do is less important, but maybe that it's not as, it's not important enough to be that stressed, but it doesn't work for everyone. But I know people who said that this helped them to be like, oh, it's just a concert, you know? It's not such a big deal. Mm-hmm. And, like, remember that making mistakes is normal. I think preparing yourself, like we said before, recording yourself, because sometimes I feel like people think that the concert is making them nervous, but I think also that the way they practice, they never really play without stopping. When they make a mistake, they stop and they start again at the note that they missed. And then they think that they had it, but they didn't really have it. You know, if you ask them to play the whole thing without stopping, they can't really do it. So it's about how you practice and how you prepare.
Right.
If you have played your piece, recorded yourself, or played in front of your parents or friends or brother and sister a few times, and you know that you can do it, you'll feel way more confident that I know this, you know. So, like, preparation is very, very important. And then it's also about how you deal with stress. But, like, I think that doing breathing exercises on a regular basis, like cardiac coherence, you can go on YouTube and type cardiac coherence. There's exercises that help with the level, the stress level on a daily basis. So maybe if you're less stressed in general, you'll also be less stressed in concert. And be careful of the words that you use when you talk to yourself, because you kind of program yourself. So if you're like nervous, I'm so nervous, so I'm going to be too nervous. Like, it's not the best way to program yourself to be calm. Maybe visualize what you want instead of what you don't want. So you want to be calm, you want to be confident, you know. And maybe see your stress as this thing in a bowl. Every time you practice, every time you prepare, you take some away from the bowl, you know. When you feel nervous, maybe see it as a signal that you need to go and practice. And you need to prepare. Then when you'll... And, like, there's going to be good concerts and bad concerts. That's how we learn. And, you know, it's... You prepare the best you can, then you do your best there, you know?
Yeah, there you go, you know?
But usually if you're well prepared and you can control your breathing.
Yeah.
And I would say, like, make sure your flute is well, you know, not glued, but, you know, very stable. Because when we shake a little bit or, you know, it can be a bit difficult, so...
Yeah, even Sue here, she says she relates to the flute girl nerves. Starting a group, the more you do it, the better it is. Yeah, you start an ensemble, if you can find one. There's a lot of good information for, I forget what website it is, but there's a music, like a wind band repository of all the, community wind bands in all of North America. And, like, in each city, you can find one or two. So, you know, and some accept people, some don't, but, like, most of them do. And it's listed. I'll have to find it out and put it in the description for that. It's a really great resource for people to join a local group.
And it's so true that the more you do it, the less stressed you are. Like, I had, at one point, I went for a summer program, and it was, who was teaching? Patrick Gallois. And he plays, I don't know how many concerts a year, maybe 100. I don't know. But he said whenever he would take 2-3 weeks of vacation, his first concert after, he was nervous.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's the same as if you get a new job. First day at the job, you are going to be a bit nervous. But after a month, you should be fine, you know?
Exactly.
So you have to be patient with yourself. Yeah. You're learning.
Totally. Exactly. So, yeah, we're just going to do two more questions. But before that, we were just going to say a couple things. Before that, we also have patreon.com where you can support us directly on a per month basis. So you can donate as little as $2 a month, and that goes directly to us and helps us make more videos, helps us make more fabulous stuff. So if you want to consider that and you find our stuff helpful and you have disposable income, by all means go there, and that helps us a lot, and you can talk with us there. Also, we have our store. We have our two stores, musicgd.com, where our sheet music is, and our courseware is for your courses. We're going to be releasing the intermediate courseware soon. And also our spring store, our merch store, physical merch. I'm wearing the new Happy Practicing t-shirt, which is really cool. And we have leggings, posters. Our poster has been selling very well. Our fingering poster, two different styles there. You can find those in the description. And also underneath this video, if you're watching it live or in post, there's a little bar of different products there that you can get live over at Teespring. I think they're called Spring now. And also, if you want to have lessons with Emily, I think you have a couple spots left still in the summer.
The summer I have more time. So it's a good time
A couple of lessons. So we have packs of 4 and 8, so that you can definitely message us about the rates for that. And you can email us at info@theflutechannel.com. So the info@theflutechannel.com. So yeah, so let's jump to, am I missing anything else? Also, go leave a review if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and can leave a review. Go and leave a 5-star review for us. It really does help us a long way on the whole algorithm of podcasting. And so yeah, I saw two great questions here. One was really interesting. I think it was from where is it now? It's missing. It was there before. There it is. Dr. Gautam Kaske. He says, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing it. I'm playing bamboo flute. Is it possible for me to play this type of flute, learning Indian classical? I also want to learn Western flute. I would say, yeah, you can totally learn any instrument. You can come from any instrument and learn the flute, which is pretty fabulous a thing.
There are some similarities. Think the embouchure will be similar.
Yeah.
And then the rest will be different. Like fingerings might be different, but the principle of the fingerings is the same. Like meaning the more the more fingers you put, the lower you go.
Yes, exactly.
Because you make the tube longer, so you go in a lower note. And you need many bamboo flutes because they're in one key.
Right.
But the
Western flute
is chromatic, so you just need one. You can play in all the keys. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, we'll be doing a video about that, which is going to be really interesting because we have some bamboo flutes in the background.
But it's very fun to learn different flutes. So yeah, you should learn the Western flute.
You totally can do it. Totally. And then I saw another one. Oh, then this will be one of our final questions. The World of Wolf wants to know how to fix the fact that I use more of my lips to play notes than my abs. You're the queen of abs. So, you know, how do you...
Yeah, look at yourself in the mirror. Make sure you don't use your lips, you know, and then you will kind of be forced to use your abs. Like the thing is, you have to put resistance, and some people put in the lips. It's not very efficient, but sometimes it works in the beginning. So then people get like, oh, it works, and they do it again. Do the sound, you know, put your hand on your belly and do, and you'll feel those muscles and use those. And look at yourself when you play and try not to, especially the upper lip. If you push it forward, it's not going to help. Or if you put tension in your throat and your lips, it's not where you want it. You really want it in the air apparatus, you know, all those muscle pushing up.
Great advice.
But you also don't want to send too much air at once. Like, it's really controlled. It's, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
But the mirror might be a very good ally for you.
Yeah, it might be a very good ally for you. Also, not to overthink too much, maybe less thinking about the lips and just more about the breathing. And then maybe the lips will gradually relax a little bit more. Not relax completely, because you still need that embouchure. You need that set piece to be ready to do what it needs to do.
Yeah, it needs to be firm, but not tense.
No, not tense,
But not too relaxed. Yeah, if it's a blue, no.
Because an embouchure is like, it's a fixed state, but it's also a flexible fixed state as well. So it's not just like one embouchure position is default for all of the range. It's very flexes up and down
But it's very small movements.
Yeah, micro movements. But imagine we have 7,000 muscles in our lips. You know what I mean? Like strands of muscles on our lips. On our top lip, we have 3,000 or something like that, and 3,000 at the bottom, give or take 7,000 altogether, maybe even more. But it's all individual muscles working together. So it's really micro.
Yes, micro movements.
So,
but usually you don't need to move the upper lip too much. So no. It's really more like
it's more
here
yeah,
and it's here jaw. It's more stable.
Because of how we're built, our jaw is the thing that moves with our bottom lip, and our upper jaw doesn't move as much.
Because like the upper lip, like you said, we don't control it so well.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't use that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in a Simple Flute by De Bost, he says the reason why he doesn't advise people to use their lips is not just that it's not as efficient, but right. also that when you're nervous, you will have way more difficulty controlling your lips than controlling your airstream.
Right, yeah.
And even like control, I don't think he says that second part, but I think even by controlling your airstream better, you're also going to be less nervous because yeah. that has a whole link with your heart rate and everything.
Exactly. So, that's a great book, by the way, if you guys are really interested in that. It's very written down to earth. It's meant for everybody who plays the flute from any age group, whatever. It's called A Simple Flute. You can get it at fluteworld.com, or you can get it on Amazon, too. You type A Simple Flute by De Bost, D-E-B-O-S-T. I highly recommend it. It's a very...
It's amazing.
It's his life work, and it's really, really, really well written.
Yeah.
So
I have it in French, but it's in both.
Yeah, I think you might buy it in English because I used to have it. And then
so we have both.
Yeah, we'll get another one. I'll have to buy it again.
Like you can read it all the way through.
Oh, yeah.
Or you can just, if you have a question about, let's say, high register.
Oh, my
gosh. You go in the index and it's like high register and you read.
Right,
like,
he gives really good information.
Breathing, articulation, yeah. like it's all chapters. Yeah. Yeah. It's a very good book.
It's a very good book to have in your collection of books that you'll probably amass through that. That's a good starter.
Because like sometimes we think, oh, I need to spend a lot of time doing scales and all that stuff. It's right. true, but uh-huh. also understanding how to do things. And that's what he does in that book. He really explains how
yes,
we do things.
Exactly.
You can practice a lot and never get there if you don't know how to get there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, I think that's it for this month. It was pretty amazing. You guys had great questions. We do this on the last Sunday of every month, like I said before. And feel free to drop a like if you're already watching this now, or if you're watching this later, come to the video, or if you're in this video right now, go and hit that like button. It helps us out a lot. Also, please leave a question for next month as well. We like reading questions in the comment section on all of our videos, including this one. And we'll be back on the last Sunday of July, where we'll probably think about the topic and release that soon as well. But I hope everybody has a wonderful month of practicing and playing. We'll be releasing a couple new videos this month, another special collaboration with another YouTube personality, which is really cool. Another YouTube musician, which is really great,
that's exciting.
Encouraged. And also probably we're going to release the video of you reviewing people and their playing as well. So that's going to be really a lot of fun. And that's it. So... yeah, anything else you'd like to add?
No, just have a nice month practicing and yeah.
Cool. Also, we'll see you guys next month. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.